The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives, you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson, and this show is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Joined today by John Breach and Tyler Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully, Ryan Wilson, deep in the draft weeds, maybe fired as a super friend. Who's to say? We might have upgraded. Let me upgrade. Remember that? That's an old like 90s reference. Anyway, gentlemen, how are we doing?
What's going on, guys? How you doing? Happy to be here.
Hello, new Sully. Super friend.
Sully's been doing a lot of these shows, so get used to Sully hanging around. And I hope, Sully, that for your sake, it means that they adjust your work balance.
Brinson, do not get used to Sully hanging around, because I believe he's going to be gone for like 2 weeks in March on his honeymoon. So just when you get used to him, that mean breakup will come. You'll be sad he's not here, and then
did you already get married, or when did you get married?
No, I'm just giving you a little taste right now. I'm here this week. I get married on Saturday.
You're married on Saturday?
And then like I'm gone 5 days away? Weeks. This Saturday?
Oh, my God.
This Saturday, I'm making an honest woman out of her.
Well, congratulations, Dolly. Remember
we're getting
when he
out
said
of here.
He would give up his married life for $6 million?
That's still on the table for a few more days. It's still on the
still
table.
Still on the table for a few more years, buddy. Ain't today. It's interesting timing to take your honeymoon in the middle of NFL free agency, but you know, it's
I come like right back for it. I had this perfectly in the window. I come
oh, you're sneaking. Okay. Yeah. So you're getting married on the you're getting married during the combine. I mean, look, you're not getting married during the season. That's all that matters. You know, like there's a really, really small window. If you truly want to eliminate all NFL coverage from your nuptials, and it's at a certain point, it's, you know, like the bride to be may push back a touch, and I would guess that's what happened in this case. So you're getting married 2 weeks after the Super Bowl. Good for you, Sully. Pump for you, buddy.
Thank you.
Obviously, our invitations lost in the mail.
Yeah, there's somewhere I can find them.
I think I invited Wilson. I think Wilson came. Did Wilson come to my wedding? I can't remember. It's a long time ago. Anyway.
I can say that Brinson was at my wedding, and we ran out of alcohol within 20 minutes.
We did. We got drunk at your wedding.
Yeah. Just smashing bottles of wine.
Sully, since I'm not invited to your wedding, you're not invited to my next wedding. Anyway.
Sully's like, our alcohol budget was $30,000. We can't invite Brinson.
So if you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button. Make sure to subscribe. If you're listening to any of the podcast platforms, give us a 5-star review. Today is February 20th, 2024, and that means the franchise tag window and transition tag window is open for NFL teams. We're going to dive into a primer on it for those that don't know. If you do know, I mean, we'll try and make it sort of the gloss 30,000 viewpoint, but also the important details. I also think it's like interesting to note, you know, I started doing this for CBS in 2011. And it's very different how NFL teams are handling the franchise tag than they used to be. Used to be the window would open and they would slap the tag and be like, we've tagged this guy. And now the NFL teams are really trying to treat it sort of more respectfully. Like they like to wait until like as long as possible because they don't want to make it look like they're abusing this functionality of the CBA that all players hate.
Brent, to your point, I have a fun fact to add to that. Over the past 6 years, there have only been 3 players tagged in the month of February. So
there you go. To your
point, they are absolutely slowing down and not just running out on first tag day and saying, tag, there's your contract.
Well, and I would suggest that I don't think this is like a collusion accusation or anything like that, but the franchise tag is painted every time there's a new collective bargaining negotiation as something that is the players want to get rid of. And so teams don't want to draw attention to it in a hyper negative way each year. Now the tag has gotten so big, it's not that crazy to play on it. And I think some players, you know, these running backs are the low number, obviously they don't want to do it. I understand when you get tagged, it's like, you know, you're not getting that security, but the way that medicine is advanced and, you know, with a fully guaranteed 1 year deal and it grows to, so if you get tagged 1 year and you get tagged a second year, it's 120%. So if 1 year fully guaranteed contract, there's a non-exclusive and exclusive tag. And Sully, maybe the best way to sort of, the best example of that is last year with Lamar Jackson, who was given the non-exclusive tag.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned a quarterback there. You know, you say, yeah, some players don't like, or most players don't like it, but you look at a guy like Kirk Cousins too. He's made a ton of money waiting it out, getting the franchise tag. I mean, he's a candidate this year.
Dak Prescott.
I mean, you know, yeah, Dak Prescott's another one. When you get these guaranteed deals, and again, quarterbacks a little bit different, but ultimately, it is a good avenue if you're trying to get just a ton of cash up front quickly. But I do understand from a player standpoint that you do want that long-term stability. I mean, you know, I was on HQ with Brian McFadden yesterday, and he was talking just about that. Like, hey, you know, yeah, sure, the upfront money's great, but a lot of these players are fighting to get to that second contract. They want to get paid a lot of money and also have that long-term security. It oftentimes happens when they're coming out of these rookie deals, yep. And it's just a tough kind of, you know, speed bump for them to get there ultimately.
Well, and just to that point, so when you're drafted, you have a 4-year contract. If you're a first-round pick, you have a 5th-year option. And so NFL teams, if they draft you in the first round, they know, and they're probably going to pay you before then if you're a really great player, but they know that they have 6 years of control, of player control. I mean, that is a ton of control when you include the franchise tag. Pertinent to our discussion of Sully's impending nuptials here, a lot of players believe that the franchise tag is the equivalent of someone refusing to propose. It's like, okay, you really, really like me because you don't want to let me go, but you don't like me enough to lock me down, you know? And so it's like a promise ring, which nobody wants a promise ring. I mean, yeah, no offense if you guys gave your lady friends promise rings. Nobody, you know, nobody wants that. They want the engagement ring. They want to get married. And I think that's sort of the analogy for the teams. As far as the non-exclusive and exclusive tag breach, what is the biggest, would you say, difference? I mean, the Lamar thing to me, with the exclusive tag, you can negotiate. You cannot negotiate with other teams. With the non-exclusive tag, other teams can come in and offer offer a contract to the player, give up 2 first-round picks, and get him on that contract. It's a very convoluted. I don't recall it ever actually happening.
Yeah, that's the thing, Brinson, is that most people thought the Ravens were crazy for putting the non-exclusive tag on Lamar Jackson last year, when in fact, the non-exclusive tag is the more common tag used. I mean, with quarterbacks, it generally is the exclusive one. But when you look at all other positions on the field, it is generally the non-exclusive tag. If you watch on YouTube, Harry's got the little cheat sheet up there that tells you some of the notes. And basically, and we saw this with Lamar Jackson, and this is the key here, is that the player who gets hit with the non-exclusive tag can go out and negotiate with another team. And then once that happens, the original team, so last year the Ravens would have had 5 days to match any outstanding offer. And if they did not do that, and say Lamar Jackson had switched teams last year, the new team has to give 2 first-round picks to the old team. And so that is really why we have not seen anyone change teams under these rules in a very long time. The last time it happened was back in 2000, 24 years ago. With Joey Galloway. So we see this tag used all the time, but we do not see players change teams all the time because no one wants to give up 2 first-round picks to get some guy. And plus, they're signing him to a huge contract. So not only are you signing a huge contract, we're giving up the draft pick. So it just, yeah, you don't see guys change teams very often.
It's one of those things, too. I don't think we're ever going to see it, because if it didn't happen last offseason with Lamar Jackson basically out there for the taking for a lot of these teams, I don't know what other circumstances there are for a play. Like, if Patrick Mahomes, I guess, becomes available, then sure, you know, a team will come up. But you had, and at that point, an MVP caliber quarterback who was on to his second MVP out there for you. All you had to do was pay him money and give up two draft picks. I mean, you know, I'm up here in New England. There are three teams up at the top of the draft that are going to use a first round pick on a quarterback that might be good. I think if you can guarantee yourself that you're going to have an MVP quarterback, you give up that other first round pick and you just pay the dude his money. I'm surprised it didn't happen last year. And it makes me think that that's not going to happen anytime soon.
By the way, do you guys remember, I'm trying to make sure that I'm correct here. Yeah. So in 2006, I mean, do you know where I'm going with this? The Steve Hutchinson, do you remember the poison pill contracts that they used to do?
Yep,
so Hutchinson's deal, Hutchinson was given the transition tag by the Seahawks, which, again, you know, transition tag, beautiful transition to the transition tag. Thanks. Great job, Harry. Players free to negotiate with other teams when your deal. You see the numbers there, the cap percentage, average of the top 10 greatest players at the player's position, or under 20% of his previous year salary. So Steve Hutchinson went out and was given the tag, went out and negotiated. The Vikings offered Hutchinson a deal that included, it was $49 million over 7 years, which is hilariously low for a guy who is Hutchinson the Hall of Fame. Did he get the Hall of Fame?
Yep.
For a Hall of Fame, like all-time guard. Great dude, too. But I think he actually played against Pete Prisco in high school in South Florida. But if Hutchinson was not the highest paid linebacker on his team.
Lyman,
yeah. The contract automatically became fully guaranteed, like, immediately. And so the Seahawks could not sign him because Walter Jones made more than Hutch. And it would mean that they would just have to give him like $49 million right away. So Hutchinson left to go to the Vikings, and the Seahawks received nothing in return. They later tried to get back, I think, at them with Nate Burleson on a poison pill deal. And eventually in the 2011 CBA, they wiped out poison pill contracts, which frankly is kind of a shame. Because it would be pretty cool if you had, like, because if you're the Falcons with Lamar Jackson, you could have included certain stipulations that would have made it prohibitive for the Ravens to match whatever offer sheet you gave him, et cetera, et cetera. Like, if Lamar is within 5 miles of crab cakes at any point during the season, he receives a $10 million raise or something, you know, like something like that. And there are no crab cakes in Atlanta. And you get the point. Like, you could, there's stuff you could do. They've done like playing time and stuff, and that got wiped out. But it's a much more sort of straightforward exercise. And you don't usually see, with the transition tag and the non-exclusive tag, other teams negotiate with those players, because there's a reason why they're getting those tags. The numbers for this year's tag, very quickly. Oh, Harry, you rule. I thought you might have seen that in there. If you're watching on YouTube, youtube.com.
Well, real quick on the transition tag, Brent, so let me throw this in, is that if you transition tag someone, they go sign with another team, you do not get any draft pick compensation. Right. You just lose the player. So there is some risk associated with hitting someone with a transition tag, which is a big reason why we do not see it used very often. As a matter of fact, I'm glad Harry does not include this trivia here, because this is trivia for you two. Who was the last player to get hit with a transition tag? Do you know?
I want to say, did LeGarrette Blount get the transition tag? Do you know that?
Wasn't
that
the
seems
last
like a
one.
Good guess. I want to say it's like a Bengals tight end.
Do you have a guess? A specific name? Or do you just
Hayden Hurst? No, he went in Bengals tight end. Who's the guy? Who's the guy they drafted in the first round?
The answer is not a Bengals tight end. It is Kenyon Drake. He got hit with the transition tag in 2020 by the Cardinals.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it's transition tag is not you. Now, you can only use one franchise tag per team, but you can use the franchise tag and the transition tag at the same time if you were so inclined. I thought the Giants should have tried to explore that with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley last year. And you see, you know, like, let Saquon go negotiate and bring Danny Dimes on the franchise tag. They'd be in a lot better position than they are right now. Harry put those numbers up. $36.4 million of rounding up here for the quarterback for a one-year deal. Linebacker, 22.8. DT, 21 million. Wide receiver, 20 and change. Defensive end, 20 and change. Offensive line, right at 20. Cornerback, 18 million. Safety, 16.3 million. Running back, tight end, 12 million, which is really low for that position in 2024. Running backs, 11.348 million. And that's why you see running backs get tagged and then kickers and punters. You don't see teams rarely do it. I think this is the last punter to be tagged?
Punter, no. I feel like Robbie Gould might have been the last kicker.
Kicker tagged. I'm pretty sure the last punter tagged was Todd. Oh, yeah, sorry, go ahead. You got a guess, Sully?
Nah, go for it. Who would it be?
Todd Sauerbrown by the Carolina Panthers, like back in, I don't know, I can't remember when that was. $5.68 million for those guys. Okay, let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll discuss what players in this 2024 offseason are good candidates to be tagged by their teams. Next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right. Welcome back to the Big Six Podcast. Will Brinson, John Breach, Tyler Sullivan, and we are breaking down what players are likely to be tagged. These decisions vary by sort of team. You see, like, depending on how long like the front office has been in place, ownership, like there's different philosophies. The Patriots, for instance, didn't often – I forgot to do that Matt Slater thing off the top, didn't I? The Patriots very often don't tag guys. Speaking of the Patriots, why don't we just fit this in real quick? Matthew Slater, retired. This is probably going to fly under the radar for a lot of NFL fans but I think you can make the case that Matthew Slater is Bill Belichick's favorite player of all time.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, it's one of them. I mean, he was advocating for him to go to the Hall of Fame earlier this season in December. I think he's going to be kind of an interesting case study. I think you're going to see a lot of different opinions about whether or not he's a candidate for the Hall of Fame. You know, that's going to be a topic of conversation. But from a Patriots 2024 standpoint, I think it's interesting. I mean, it's kind of a good time for him to go, obviously moving on from Bill Belichick, but he was the leader or one of the leaders in that locker room. You're bringing in a lot of new faces. I almost kind of feel like he would have been great to kind of keep around for one more year to help you transition into the Gerard Mayo era. So, you know, from that standpoint, it could be a little shaky, but ultimately great player, you know, at his position, great leader. And from the minimal interactions that I've had with him, swell guy, and anything that you ever hear from him, really nice dude. 10 Pro Bowls, a bunch of first team All Pros. I think he's got 5, 8 all overall. I think like there were 3 of them were second team All Pro. He has accolades to potentially be a Hall of Famer. It's just he's a special teams specialist, so I don't know if he gets in.
He would need sort of a window like Devin Hester got right this year, and he didn't really have the peaks that Hester had. Where
there's no like number to really quantify how great he was other than just to say he was in 10 Pro Bowls.
So I'm trying to think. I don't know if I want to tell the story just because it's like.
Well, real quick with Matthew Slater is that you have, I would say, the only other special teams player that became as much as a household name, as much as you can know who a special teams player is probably Steve Tasker. And he's still not in the Hall of Fame. So it's just one of those things where I'm not sure the committee's ever going to give specialists their due. Kickers have a tough time getting in. Punters have a tough time getting in. As we saw with Devin Hester, returners have a tough time getting in, even though Hester did finally or did get in. Tasker or Matthew Slater getting in, I think, would be a surprise, even though I do think they probably deserve to be in, because you can't just say one phase of football doesn't matter and not put those guys in.
Yeah, and also, like, he's retiring at a time when a bunch of guys who put up huge numbers offensively because of the changes in the rules, including his old teammate Tom Brady, like, it's just a flood of guys who are going to be leaving the NFL and eligible for Canton. It's going to be difficult for a guy who's just a meat and potatoes special teams guy to get in. My story is basically that at the Indianapolis, the 2011 Super Bowl, he had a podium, and which is insane. Like, he had a podium at the media day. And I misidentified him as I was thinking he was a cornerback and was asking him a question. He goes, bro, I'm Matthew Slater. I was like, thank God I'm the only person standing here talking to you. Because, like, it was like my second Super Bowl. I was like walking around trying to like ask everybody a question. It's not that great of a story, but let's move on to the next segment.
Wait, his name is on the podium, right?
I mean, I don't know how you screw that up.
How'd you miss it?
I can't remember what cornerback I thought he was.
Oh my God. What is it like? Asante Samuel. No one's around him.
I asked him a defensive question, thinking that he also played defense. I think I can't remember. He was just like, dude. I was like, my bad. Gonna leave. He's like, cool, man. See you, bro. I'm walking around for like 5 minutes. Like, I wonder if that was recorded on like the giant camera. Like, anyway. Let's play Tag 'em or Bag 'em. This Tag 'em or Bag 'em segment is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. I'm going to give you guys a name, and you can tell me whether you would tag them if you were the GM of the team, whether you think the team will tag them, or whether you'd bag them and let them walk. We'll start in Jacksonville with Trent Baalke, lover of long arms and hater of Jim Harbaugh. The Jaguars and Chargers get to play this year. That'd be great. Josh Allen, linebacker, outside linebacker, pass rusher, edge guy. Josh Allen, former first-round pick. Sully, would you tag him?
I think it's a no doubt he gets tagged. I think it's clear-cut. I mean, you just referenced it. The front office said as much at the end of the season. They're like, we expect Josh Allen. Or they said something even more definitive, like, Josh Allen will be a Jaguar in 2024. So it's, you know, that seems pretty legit. He's coming off of a career year. He had this franchise record in sacks, 90 pressures. I mean, the dude was one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. You don't let those guys go to market because it's almost impossible to retain them. It's a very, you know, this might be one of the easier tags or at least decisions for Jacksonville. They can't lose a guy like this.
Yeah, especially with all their questions on both sides of the ball, really, is that I don't know how much homegrown talent Jacksonville has, but Josh Allen is absolutely one of them. And he is coming off a season, as Tyler said, not just a career season, but we're talking about a guy who finished second in the NFL in sacks. He was just a bully this year. This was by far his best season, and there's no way. And if you think, hey, look, what if he regresses to year two or year three? That's an argument for the franchise tag, because if you sign him a long-term deal, then you're stuck. You say, all right, let's see if he can do this for one more year, and then we'll go from there. So, yeah, I think this one's a no-brainer. I think Jacksonville has to franchise tag
him. And not only that, real quickly, you know, as much as you say how great he is, yet they need him for more ways than just keeping a homegrown talent. We always joke about the AFC South not being that competitive. It's about to flip over these next few years with C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson coming back. You need to disrupt these quarterbacks, and a guy like Josh Allen can help you do that.
Yeah, agree completely. And, I mean, yeah, AFC South looks like to be much better. You also have the issue, too. Brian Burns in the 2019 draft class is a first-round pick. We'll talk about him in a second. Actually, we just go ahead and mention him as well, because I think the Panthers may be less likely to tag him than the Jaguars would have tagged Josh Allen. Like, the Josh Allen thing is just done. It's a done deal. I would expect Brian Burns is getting tagged. I would not be shocked if the Panthers used the non-exclusive tag and allowed teams to negotiate with him. Or, should also be noted, we've seen this, Frank Clark, I think there's another example too, where you can tag a guy with the exclusive tag and just trade it. And that happens all the time. Edge rusher salaries currently, I mean, Nick Bosa just broke the market up to $34 million per year. But you look at T.J. Watt, 28, Joey Bosa, 27, Myles Garrett, 25, Montez Sweat, Rashawn Gary, 24, Max Crosby 23.5, Khalil Mack 23.5, Bradley Chubb 22. It's like you have to – these both Josh Allen and Brian Burns are going to command in that upper echelon, not the Nick Bosa number, but like in that upper echelon of contract. And so that's a lot to give out for guys who have been inconsistent. I assume you guys would also be tagging Brian Burns.
Yeah, I think that's – well, that's the thing, though. Yes, because of the player and because of the talent, but where this team is right now –
yeah, I agree completely.
Does it make sense for them to really invest that much into that player, or is he a great, like you were mentioning, tag and trade? Or
tag and trade seems like it makes the most sense because this team has so many holes on their roster that you want to fill it, but you also do not want to let Brian Burns just walk away in free agency and get nothing in return. So I think at the minimum, if you are thinking about letting him walk, that you call up teams like, look, we're going to tag him. Do you want him?
Brian Burns, by the way, also just 25 years old at the end of his rookie deal because he was drafted at the age of 21, Josh Allen, 26. I mean, but that's the thing is, like, if you're the Jaguars and you have Trevor Lawrence and you feel like you've got a team that made the playoffs last year, you probably want to work towards a long-term deal because you want this guy in his prime over these next few years if you think you can contend. I argued on with my buddy Adam Gold on 99.9, the fan in Raleigh on Monday that, like, Carolina's better off tagging Burns and trading him and getting a first-round pick because this is not a team that is built to compete for the next 2 years, I don't think. So, you know, I just think you're better off getting assets, even for a guy that, you know, if you signed to a big deal, you'd have through his, you know, age 29 season. All right, next we head to Breachtown. I'm guessing, John Breach, that you would not let T. Higgins – walk out the door. But my favorite fact about T. Higgins is that he was the first person drafted after Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Like, Andy Reid, come on, man. That would have imagined T. Higgins on that offense with Patrick Mahomes. But you won't be doing that because you'll be imagining T. Higgins tagged on the Cincinnati Bengals, right, Breach?
That is correct. I think that is the only move that makes sense. Look, the wide receiver tag isn't a huge number. We have the estimate you know, right around 20.7 million. It might go up a little depending on what the salary cap ends up being, but I think they have to. T. Higgins has been so productive. I mean, he has made some phenomenal catches, and I understand why he doesn't want to be tagged because I'm sure he would love to either get paid like a number one receiver or go to another team and prove that he can be a number one receiver. But if you're the Bengals, you know, you have Ja'Marr Chase at a very low rate for this upcoming season in 2024. And paying T. Higgins $20 million for the upcoming season isn't going to break the bank. You have a lot of salary cap money. I think the Bengals have the fourth or fifth most available cap space going into free agencies. So I absolutely do whatever is necessary to keep T. Higgins. And if that means franchise tagging him, then do it.
Yeah, I would say keep him for sure. I mean, he's definitely someone that, you know, this team, they almost kind of are getting, you know, underlooked as to how much they could legitimately be in the Super Bowl conversation next year. And I know that you have to pay, obviously, the Burrow Murray's coming in. You have to pay Ja'Marr Chase. But this is a team that could very easily be in the Super Bowl next year. And I don't think that they should be in the business of losing players. Now, if you don't want to sign them to a long-term deal, I could kind of get that. But for 2024, I definitely keep this guy aboard to see what the heights of this franchise could be.
Here's the thing. If you don't keep T Higgins, if you don't tag T Higgins or sign him to a deal, Tyler Boyd's a free agent. And after that, it's Andre Ivosivas and Trenton Irwin behind it, along with Charlie Jones. Apologies to Andre for probably butchering his name. Ja'Marr Chase is a special player, elite talent. He's been a little banged up the last couple of years. You let T. Higgins walk, Ja'Marr Chase gets hurt, you have Joe Burrow throwing to nobody. I don't see how they could possibly let him walk. And frankly, I think they have to figure out a way to get him under a contract. You know, it's going to be like $23 million a year, and you're going to have to pay Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase is going to get the biggest wide receiver contract. The issue for these teams and these wide receivers, and we'll talk about a couple more in a second, is that when Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams were traded, they were adamant. Their agents were adamant, or they were adamant, or somebody was adamant that no matter what, and the same thing with DeAndre Hopkins when he was traded originally to the Cardinals, they wanted to be the top paid wide receiver by some metric. And they didn't care how they got there, if it was funny money, whatever it was, they just wanted to say, I'm the top paid wide receiver. So they get traded and they have these contracts where Tyreek Hill gets $30 million a year and Devontae Adams gets $28 million a year. But if you look at the total guaranteed and the fully guaranteed numbers, it's just not up there. Now, they're probably going to end up collecting all the money, but the market has not regressed back to the level that I think a lot of NFL teams thought. And so T. Higgins is going to want $26 million a year. He's not going to take $22 or $23 million a year. And I think that's the problem with these long-term contracts. You know, Brandon Ayuk, another guy, but it's like, it's just going to be really hard to convince these wide receivers to say, take less on your average annual salary, even though you're getting more guaranteed because of those inflated top-end contracts. Next up, Giants running back, Saquon Barkley. Bag him or tag him, Sully?
I don't know if I tag him. I think I let him. I think I bag him. I don't know if this team is a Saquon Barkley tag away from competing in the NFC East. I don't know if, you know, as much as he's meant to the franchise, and I get all of those angles to why you would want to keep him around, I don't know if he'd be happy on the tag. So if you tag him and that's all you want to do, I don't know if that really...
I can tell you he would not be happy on the tag.
Right, exactly. So you it's not like... But it's a great point. It's not like you can just say, oh, he's tagged, he'll be totally fine with it. Sometimes with these players, you tag them and they're pissed about it. They don't want this at all. And you're almost creating a volatile situation. As much as you want to keep the player, you only want to keep him at a certain number and they don't like the number. Sometimes it's just not, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. And for Barkley, I just don't know if this is one of those situations where you can tag him and ultimately hope to keep him in 2024. I think it might be a maybe tag and trade at best.
Yeah, it feels like this relationship has kind of run its course. It seems like he was frustrated and that, look, his tag number is also going to be higher than whatever the standard running back tag is going to be because he's going to get a 20% increase on his salary from last season. So he's going to make over $12 million if you hit him with the franchise tag. And it does feel like it would be better for both sides to just kind of move on. You know, it's not just Saquon Barkley or just the Giants. It just seems like both sides would almost prefer that. And I think the New York Post actually reported on today, Tuesday, that it's unlikely that Barkley gets the tag. So it seems like that's the way they're leaning. You know, he's dealt with a few injury issues, and maybe if you're the Giants, you don't want to deal with that anymore. So yeah, I probably do not tag him.
Yeah, I think the only reason this is even a conversation, honestly, because the tag would be $12 million. It would put him, he would be the fourth-ish highest paid running back, fourth or fifth highest paid running back by McCaffrey, Kamara, Jonathan Taylor, and Nick Chubb. Read about Josh Jacobs, who got the tag last year, assuming he didn't get tagged again. And it's like ownership loves him. It's the only reason they view him as the face of the franchise, this New York athlete. And it's the only reason that he is even in consideration for this tag, because otherwise you wouldn't allocate $12 million of your salary cap, even if it's going to be $250 million. Like, you still wouldn't want to do it for a running back who's been injured, is going to be unhappy on that tag, and is going to leave after next year anyway. So I think, maybe it's a situation where you don't tag him, let him go test the market, see what he can get. If the market's really soft, and it usually is with these running backs, especially when you got like Derrick Henry's going to be out there, you know, it's not an easy market. Maybe he comes back and signs a lesser deal with the Giants that, everybody can sort of save a little face. I think that's probably the best outcome there. Said to New England, Sully, also North Carolina, technically, Lenore Ryan, the man drafted by Nike, the dog, Bill Belichick's dog, Patriots safety, Kyle Duggar. During the COVID draft, maybe the greatest draft moment of all time. You tagging Kyle Duggar?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's someone that is good for the system, familiar obviously with Gerard Mayo. I think that he's someone you try to emphasize to keep around at a relatively, you know, decent number for safeties. And he's played extremely well, versatile, can play cover safeties, can work in the backfield, in the back end of the secondary. I just feel like he's somebody who could potentially develop into that leadership role as well. I mean, we're just talking about Matt Slater. I think that he's somebody that could eventually, not only for his contributions on the field, but also from a locker room standpoint, I think he buys into a lot of what Gerard Mayo is selling. And for a first-year head coach, you need to have as many guys in your corner as humanly possible. And I think Duggar could be one of them. And this team is going to be led by their defense. They might have a young quarterback, but they're going to be a defensive-minded team. And so if you can have a playmaker like Duggar, I think that makes a lot of sense for them. And they have a ton of money to burn.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's always point. Look, if you're Mayo, you don't want to be going. You already have a guy who understands the defense. He's familiar. You know, this is not going to be a huge scheming difference from what Belichick's doing. And you want these guys that already know your system around, and you have someone who is just kind of a chess piece who you can put anywhere. So, I think this one makes sense.
Be the fourth highest paid safety, I think, because the number is 16.258 million. That would actually put him above Jesse Bates, behind only Derwin James, Minkah Fitzpatrick, and Jamal Adams, who I think is probably getting cut. So maybe the third highest paid safety. This is really one, I think, that with the new head coach, young player, versatile, fits in the scheme, was on the Mayo defense, would make a lot of sense to actually figure out a way to get a deal done. And like you said, they got tons of cap space, so not a huge problem there. Have you heard anything, Sully, about that, like a possible deal for?
No, I think that you're right. I think that there's probably a handful of guys the Patriots want to retain. He's certainly one of them. I think Michael Wenu's another one. Hunter Henry's another one. You know, this is a team in transition. He's young enough that you could start to kind of build these pieces with. He could be one of the leaders on defense. I just think that this makes a lot of sense, not only as a tag, but as you mentioned, as an extension as well.
Man, that's a lot. It's a lot for safety. All right. Anyway, moving on.
Safeties aren't cheap, Brenton.
Safeties aren't cheap. And look what Jesse Bates did to that defense for the Atlanta Falcons this year. All right. Ravens. That's just a big old shot at you, Breach. Ravens defensive tackle Justin Madubuike. Fun name to say. What an amazing year for him. This is a guy that if he's not franchise tagged, you can guess where every single person on the planet who covers the NFL is going to predict where he might be signing in 2024, the offseason, because his old DC, Mike McDonald, now the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. Bag it or tag it, Breach.
Yeah, if I'm the Ravens, I absolutely tag him. I mean, we're talking about a guy who, as a defensive tackle, you know, we see some big numbers from the pass rushers. But look, to me, this one's another no-brainer. I mean, you're talking about a guy who had 13 sacks and just kind of transformed what the defense was able to do. And I'm sure Mike McDonald will be the first person on the phone, as you mentioned, Brenton, if the Ravens didn't pull the trigger on the franchise tag. And I know the Ravens probably know that. So they're thinking, if we don't want to lose them, we don't have much of a choice here. So it's really crazy what he has done since his rookie year, when he wasn't even a full-time starter. So you're talking about from season one in 2020 to season four in 2023, and he's just become this force that is a key part of the Ravens defense.
26 years old, was just an absolute stud for them. And if you're a Ravens team, you were right there to get to the Super Bowl. And a lot of that was because of your defense. I know that obviously Lamar won MVP, but the calling card for this Ravens team was their defense. You mentioned it. They lost their defensive coordinator. And as we've seen over the last few years, when you lose those coordinators, it's a huge deal sometimes. And so if you want stability, if you want to keep this team and firing on all cylinders on that side of the ball, you try to keep as many playmakers as possible. This dude, again, 26 years old, it's a no-brainer.
13 sacks last year after having 8.5 combined in his first three seasons with Baltimore. His first three seasons, he also had 16 quarterback hits. Last year, he had 33. I mean, that is ridiculous. Tackles for loss numbers, 12. This is a guy that gets a ton of pressure. And I would think that you could tag him and sign him to a long-term deal that is sort of below market, because even though the numbers are there and the production is there, it is just a single year, and he is not on the radar of your average, like, I know that doesn't necessarily matter as much when you're talking contracts, but he's just not on the radar as like an elite, a defensive pressure guy. So I think there's a decent chance to make a move there, and you get the cheaper tag at defensive tackle. Defensive tackle is more this year. 20.986 versus 20.247 for a defensive end. That's kind of rare. Interesting to note there. All right, next up, bag or tag, Buccaneers. Actually, we can just go across the board on the Buccaneers. Antoine Winfield, safety. Baker Mayfield, quarterback. And then Mike Evans, you can include, although there's some weird stipulation with Mike Evans getting tagged where it would be like really high for like higher than the average wide receiver tag. So what do you think here, Breach? How do you handle the Bucks? And do you have that Mike Evans stipulation offhand so I don't have to Google it really fast?
It is insane. Well, so you're not tagging Mike Evans because his tag would be phenomenally high because of what his cap hit was last year. So I think the tag would be over $28 million, which is way higher than the receiver tag, which will be about $20.7 million, which we mentioned earlier. But with Antoine Winfield, I think the Tampa Bay Times actually reported today that the Buccaneers would, if they tag someone, it would probably be Winfield, which I still think is interesting because if you think it really says to either they think they're confident they can get a deal done with Baker Mayfield, or they just aren't completely sold on Mayfield despite the fact that he just had this huge season. So this is a tough one. I think that I probably do, because you don't want to kick the can with Baker Mayfield. I think that maybe you get sign him to like a 2 or 3 year deal. If he's asking for $50 million, maybe you tag him. So I don't even know. I'm glad I don't run the Buccaneers front office, but I think I would probably tag Winfield over Mayfield. That's where I was going with that. That's the field I'm in.
I think this is one of those things that we saw in New York last year, right? Where it was, you know, are they going to be able to tag Saquon because they got Daniel Jones under contract? Can they kind of swoop in under the rug, kind of get that thing done quickly? I think you kind of go into that same kind of mode here with Tampa Bay. I would be prone to do everything I can to keep the quarterback, especially if you feel like he's a guy that you can have for the next few years, like you were saying, Breach. But I also look at Antoine Winfield, and you know, anytime I turn the Bucks on this year, this dude was making plays. I mean, he was not only just piling up stats, I think he had like 6 sacks. I think he led the league in forced fumbles, or was tied for the lead in forced fumbles. He was a key anchor for them defensively. And so I kind of lean on keeping him, but again, I don't know how you can look into the abyss at quarterback and just say, all right, let's see what happens. Because if you're Baker Mayfield, like, I know that you had a successful season in Tampa Bay, but you're not going to look around after that great year and see if Atlanta will pay you more.
Coordinator's gone too. Exactly. Nathan Allen is in Charlotte with the Panthers now.
And you might be losing Mike Evans. We don't know what's going to happen with him. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of variables there.
I'm with you. I think that I agree with you. I think I agree completely. The Bucs have to be thinking quarterback is more important than anything. But at the same time, it's like, I mean, Antoine Winfield is a guy you drafted who is a key player for that defense and a superstar. You know, can you hammer, like, you'd love to hammer out a deal with him. But it also sounds like, I know there's like some rumor about Baker going to the Patriots, or like the Patriots swooping in and stealing Baker. And I don't really buy that.
I don't know if that happens. I think that there's a scenario where Patriots go veteran.
Mike Florio is having himself an offseason so far.
Sure.
Does the NFL have an age discrimination issue? He's like, Baker needs to go to the Patriots. It's like, this feels like, what is Florio going to be firing off in July? If this is what he's shooting off in February. We're going to get some insane quarterback trade rumor from Florio at the combine. He's on a heater right now when it comes to
Brady and Belichick reuniting with the Panthers. That's
right. Right. But I think that it does feel like, contrary to that report, that Baker wants to be in Tampa Bay, that he likes the setup there. He had success in his first year there. I think he and Jason Light, the GM, get along. So I would say tag Antoine Winfield and play chicken with Baker personally, just because a lot of the teams who are quarterback needy are high in the draft and probably going to be making picks. And maybe, I don't think you're going to have a ton of competition for Baker as previously thought. All right, last one. Dolphins. Christian Wilkins. Stud out of Clemson. Tagging or bagging, Breach?
So this is the only decision I am going to make based fully on the team salary cap situation. You look at where the Dolphins are right now, they are so far over the cap that is almost laughable. They're more than $50 million over the salary cap. They have to have everything in order by the time free agency starts on March 13th. And if you tag Wilkins, you have to be able to fit his entire salary under your cap. So that's going to knock you up to $74, $75 million that you got to get figured out. I do know that, look, you can restructure contracts and get that number down. But this just makes it incredibly difficult. So I think if you're the Dolphins, you work as hard as you can to get a multi-year deal done. And if it doesn't happen, you say, look, man, we love you, but we got to let you walk because this just doesn't make sense for us.
I think that's exactly what's going to happen there. I think that that's the situation that they find themselves in just because of their cap constraints. Ultimately, I think that he might be one of the biggest beneficiaries of not being tagged, because we're going to see the likes of, like we were just saying, we think Madubuike is going to get tagged. Chris Jones is probably going to stay in Kansas City. A lot of these defensive tackles are not going to make it to market. He might be the top dude on there and really catch a bag, which is great because he's a Massachusetts.
He might be the best available free agent in the league, yeah, if he doesn't get tagged. Christian Wilkins is a star, man.
Yeah,
absolutely. At least I think he is. 9 sacks last year. Good time to do it. He is 28, but I mean, still, he would get a bag.
We'll know if he's the best free agent in the league, because I think Prisco has his top 100 free agents coming out tomorrow on Wednesday.
Never even heard of that guy, Prisco. I do think it's worth noting too here. So if the Dolphins tagged him, and they were still trying to figure out their salary cap thing, he could wait and wait and wait until the last minute to sign it. And if the new league year began and he hadn't signed his tag, and so it wasn't, although I guess it's actually technically, if they've tagged you, it still applies to the salary cap, even if he hadn't signed it. So like, there's a situation where they might have to rescind the tag if they were over it, like, you know, if they couldn't come into a deal. So yeah, I mean, that's good for Christian Wilkins. That could equal getting paid. All right, that's it for Tag Talk. Take a break when we come back. Lessons learned from 2023. Next.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, time to look at some lessons from 2023. We each have one. Reach, yours is very simple.
Yeah, this one is simple, but I think it's obvious at this point because every year we try to talk ourselves into doing it, and that is never bet against the Kansas City Chiefs.
Reach froze there? Did Reach freeze there?
Did I freeze?
Yeah, a little bit. Try to talk ourselves into
– I got frozen. Maybe you froze.
That was you, Brinson.
Totally possible.
No, but I think it's never bet against the Chiefs. It's that simple. Every year we sit here in August and we try to talk ourselves out of the Chiefs. We saw the year where the Broncos added Russell Wilson. It was like, oh, they're going to be so much better. Or the Raiders have Jimmy Garoppolo. Or the Chargers are absolutely stacked because they added all this talent. This is going to be their Chiefs get knocked off.
Chiefs traded away Tyreek Hill, and they were plus 160 to win the division.
Right.
Or
the Chiefs don't have anyone to throw to. Patrick Mahomes has no receivers. What are they going to do? Travis Kelce's getting too old. We come up with new excuses every single year. And every year the Chiefs laugh in our face. So I will not be betting against the Chiefs anymore.
I think it's a good lesson. I mean, you know, you see everybody who gets these is like, oh, yeah, I got my Super Bowl prediction right. It's like, you did. You picked the Chiefs. Like, I think that we maybe took for granted a little bit just how, and Sully, you understand this as well as anybody because you live in New England. Like, this is what the Patriots were like for 20 years. You can pick somebody else to win the AFC. Knock yourself out. It's probably going to be New England with a shot at the AFC title game at absolute worst.
Yeah, it's crazy how similar their like inevitability is to this, yeah, to the most previous Patriots kind of run of Super Bowls. It reminds me of the same exact thing. It's pretty remarkable. And even going into this postseason, you know, you could say, like you were saying, preseason, oh yeah, no, I picked the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. It was a lot harder to say that going into the postseason, especially after seeing the wide receivers struggle the way that they did. We all thought that was going to be their Achilles heel. But you know what? they played great defense. They could run the football, and they still had Travis Kelce and Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid running the show on the sidelines. When you have stuff like that, it's hard to take down, especially a guy like Patrick Mahomes who can literally change a game on a dime. So they're a team that I think you can now just pencil in, like you could the Patriots over the last few years. The floor is the AFC Championship. Wake me up when they get there, and let's see what happens.
And it's worth noting, too. It's like, I mean, look, Ryan Wilson not here, so he can't defend himself on this. I said for like the final 5 to 6 weeks of the season, I was like, okay, the Chiefs don't look great. We can be panicked about them, but what if their offense flips a switch? And we saw Patriots teams like Avery Wilson's like, that's just not going to happen. Just can't happen. Yeah, it can. It did to a degree. And they had a bunch of scoreless quarters and scoreless drives in the playoffs. But we saw for years Patriots teams that weren't that great. You just got it. You get them to the playoffs, and they just have these different advantages with coaching at quarterback, where they know how to win in these spots because they've won so much. It's like you just actually Patrick Mahomes win 4 games, Sully.
And not only that, like it's just eerily similar to how I watched the last few years with Brady and Belichick, with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. As they also have this, you know, I said inevitability, but they also have this like weird voodoo magic where all of a sudden these teams just make these crazy mistakes and they just pounce all over it and they win the game. I mean, a muffed punt in the Super Bowl where it kind of kicks a returner in the ankle and they somehow get into the red zone, they score a touchdown, it completely flips the game. That stuff doesn't happen all the time, but it does seem to happen to the Kansas City Chiefs, very similar to how often it happened with New England. It's one of those things where just, I don't know if it's luck or if it's some voodoo or whatever is going on there, but they have that thing that really centers around them winning as well.
Yeah, there's some quote. I'm trying to find it right now, but I probably won't get to it, but I'll paraphrase it. Bill Walsh, I mean, like all these, you know, it's like before you can win the fight, you've got to be in the fight. I mean, one, that applies. But then two, it's like he basically said, if you keep your cool when bleep hits the fan, you don't have to like elevate your game. You just have to maintain your level. Everyone else is going to freak out, and you're going to like, you know, you're going to benefit from that. And we've seen that certainly with the Patriots and now with the Chiefs as well. All right. My lesson. Oh, sorry. Breach, you got another one.
No, go. One lesson each.
Okay. One lesson each. My lesson. Patience with a head coach can sometimes pay off. And we saw that this year with Dan Campbell. He started in 2021, 0-10-1. And finished 3-13-1. In 2022, he started 1-6. When he was 1-6, when the Lions were 1-6 in 2022, so you're talking like what 4-19-1 in Dan Campbell's tenure. There was definite talk about him on the hot seat and getting rid of Dan Campbell, and firing Dan Campbell because it's not working out a year and a half in, and biting ankles is coming back, and we're talking about that. And this happens all the time with NFL coaches and with college coaches, where you struggle out of the gate, the bad team. The Lions were patient. Campbell ripped off a bunch of wins to close the season. I think he finished 9-8. Obviously, you're not going to fire him after that run when he beats Green Bay on Sunday night to knock the Packers out of the playoffs. But then they come back this year and make the NFC title game. And I just think there are franchises, I mean, hey, Carolina, that would have said, well, this isn't working a year and a half in and fired Dan Campbell, and you'd be rebooting all over again.
Who do you think that is now? Who is the team that should preach patience for the situation that they have, as opposed to, like you're saying, like they pull a Carolina and just blow it up?
Like a Carolina. Zach Taylor, good example. I mean, Zach Taylor, good example of that too, Breach, we think, maybe.
Yeah, I was absolutely going to bring up Zach Taylor. That look, they started 2-14. They expected low. They didn't expect much from the team in 2019, Andy Dalton's last season. And then even Joe Burrow's rookie year, after he tore his ACL, they kind of just went into the toilet. They went 4-11-1, and it was just like, this guy has 6 wins in his first 2 seasons. He is 6-25-1. How can you justify keeping him? There are a lot of people calling for his head, but if there is one thing the Bengals don't do, it is fire their coaches 2 years in the contract, and the patience paid off. You go to 2 straight AFC title games, you go to a Super Bowl. So absolutely, there are situations where this makes a lot of sense. And I think that's a problem with everybody's we want results now, is that sometimes you do need that patience. And Dan Campbell and Zach Taylor are very good examples of that.
I think if I was going to pick a team right now that's in that spot, I would say the Giants. You know, they had that first good season with Brian Daboll. Last year, 6-11. People were like, we're out of the Giants. These guys sucks. These guys don't know what they're doing. Like, it looked to me very clear like they know what they're doing that first year. If anything, they're a victim of their own success because they won games, went to the playoffs that first year. And it reminds me, I've said this a ton, it reminds me of the Buffalo Bills when Sean McDermott took over. Brian Daboll was there with him. How, like, surprising first year, step back in the second year, and then, you know, find your quarterback. They still got to do that, but find your quarterback and maybe have success. I think you could also argue that the Bills qualify.
Like, no, the Bills don't qualify. Dan Campbell and Zach Taylor were absolutely nobody would have questioned them if they got fired after two seasons.
Yeah, season half.
They might qualify for a different conversation,
but not a different conversation. Fair.
Right.
Like, I see what you're saying where they could.
Yeah. Like, I just feel like people are like, well, this Buffalo thing's done. Let's pull the plug and reboot the whole thing. It's like, pretty good football team in the last few years.
I think Jonathan Gannon in Arizona is one too. I think that he's, you know, I think he kind of got clowned on when he first got hired in Arizona. And then, you know what? They were kind of spunky. They weren't awful. They weren't terrible. And if Kyler Murray's even somewhat decent, I think that this team, even if they struggle a little bit out of the gate, I think that he's a decent head coach. I think they'll actually be all right.
And you can add to my, like, Malik Nabers or Marvin Harrison Jr. in the draft, yep. And all of a sudden you get a game changer.
I'll throw a wild card out there. How about the Chicago Bears?
Ooh.
Preaching patience there. They went from 3-14 the year plus his first season to 7-10 last season.
And so, still on the hot seat the whole way to the end, too.
And he was, but you look at a lot of those losses. I mean, they had a bunch of one-score losses. I think, I want to say five of their 10 losses. It was just, it felt like they were on the cusp, but again, you know, maybe they draft Caleb Williams and just to get the reset because you feel like you aren't going to get fired if you start over with a new quarterback. So who knows what they do there? That's their big question mark. But I do feel like maybe it pays off if they stick with Eberflus. I don't know.
That's the storyline of the offseason, what the Bears do with that number one pick now that Belichick's unemployed. All right, Sully, your lesson for 2023.
Perfect. It flows right in. And, you know, it's something that I think we can look at this offseason when we're starting to look at futures and win totals and all of that. Bet on teams that emphasize their infrastructure and their stability. If there's a lot of coaching changes, specifically at the coordinator spots, you might want to stay away. Philadelphia Eagles were coming off a Super Bowl. They kept Nick Sirianni. They still had Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, all these studs. You think, you know what? They're going right back. They were my pick to get into the Super Bowl against the Ravens. They were my pick to win the Super Bowl this year. One thing that I overlooked was the fact that they lost both of their coordinators. That's, you know, we just look at it from a rookie quarterback standpoint to go, oh, that screws up their development. But when you lose two guys that are running your offense and defense, don't overlook that. Because so when we're looking at Baltimore and they lost Mike McDonald, okay, fine, that, you know, maybe they'll be able to land on their feet. They got a lot of talented players. But you know what? He was the reason for a lot of their success. You can't just put it on John Harbaugh. You can't just put it on those players and that defense. He was part of that success. How much? We'll find out. But for me, sometimes I feel like it might be wiser to just stay away. One of the underrated things I think already of this offseason is the fact that the Houston Texans did not lose Bobby Slowick as their offensive coordinator. The fact that they're going to be able to give C.J. Stroud a second season of stability at their offensive coordinator spot cannot be overlooked. They just won the division. He won Offensive Rookie of the Year. I think that that is the biggest win so far this offseason. They were able to keep him.
You throw Brian Johnson in there too with the Lions.
Yep.
Yeah, same absolutely.
Thing. Same thing.
Great call. Two things there. One, Sully, you were getting some serious heat in the streets with the Eagles and the Ravens looking like the two number one seeds of first bird Super Bowl. Like, people were talking. People were like, "Oh, Sully might have his pick," and then boom, the Eagles crashed.
Crater.
And obviously, San Francisco broke them. And then secondly, like, and I'm not taking a dig here at Breach, but you know, the Titans hired Brian Callahan, and you look at the AFC North.
Brinson taking a dig at me.
No, but the Bengals lose their offensive coordinator, who we think is a pretty good offensive coordinator, even if he's not calling plays. The Browns, as a result, lose the best offensive line coach in football in Bill Callahan, Brian's dad, who goes to the Titans. And then you have the Ravens losing Mike McDonald. You know, the Steelers add Arthur Smith. The Steelers lose Matt Canada. There's a lot of stuff sort of below the surface marinating there in the AFC North. I think it's really interesting from my point.
Below the surface, it's not just head coach and quarterback. There's that other stuff that you have to look at.
Yeah, it's like when people handicap games, they're like, well, I mean, everybody's healthy. It's like half the offensive line's missing. That's a big deal. You know, the stuff that's below the surface matters as well.
Is this Brinson talking himself into a Steelers AFC
Justin
North
Fields,
title?
Steelers AFC pick? North title. Yeah, let's go.
What is happening?
All right. Anything else on lessons learned in 2023? Learned a few life lessons. We can get to those later. Sully's going to learn a big life lesson in 2024. What it's like to be married. Ooh. Man, Sully.
More rings than Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah. We'll be back tomorrow. Brady and Dews. We'll be going live at noon Eastern time. This will be our Wednesday show time because of life lessons learned elsewhere. For Sully, for Breach, I'm Brinson. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you guys later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.